Hello and welcome to another edition of the World's Greatest Online Magazine Presents the Half-Baked Podcast, the perfect website to discuss which shower beer goes best with your shower, Reuben. There's only a few of us here. It's just me and DK. Hey, DK.
Hey everybody.
We are going to pack a lot of content into this little golden nugget of an episode, so let's just get going with it right away. There's plenty of stuff to talk about. We're going to keep it twin-centric today. And you know what? Why don't we jump in with the bad news first? And today, the Twins lost to the White Sox 8-9. I believe they gave up the lead, what was it, 3, 4, maybe 5 times?
4 times.
I think if you want to count that last run in the 10th, you could call it 5 times. The first couple weren't on the bullpen, but the rest are. So again, let's start with the bad news, the bullpen. I don't even know where to start, to be honest.
Well, we can start with the only good pitcher, Yoan Duran.
Okay, we'll start the bad news with the good news before we get to the worst news. Yes,
the good
yes,
news yes. is we have one good reliever, and he's a 24-year-old rookie.
That's appropriate. Actually, you know what? I have to look up the names because there's a lot of them in there, and I don't really know many of them. Like Miguel was in there today.
I mean, there's a revolving. Do you want to know who pitched today, or you want to know the entire revolving cast of characters?
I was going to. I mean, either one isn't pretty.
No. And they're pretty much at the point where they're trying everybody they have and everybody they rotate in every possible situation. And they're all faltering.
Before we get into specific players, how about this? The bullpen is, you know, admittedly bad. Who is most at fault for
this? Whose fault is this?
I don't want to put it that way. I don't want to put it that way because it doesn't sound right. But is this an issue of front office not finding the right talent? Is this an issue of management not, you know, figuring out the right player for the right moment? Is just this an issue of the players just playing like crap?
I mean, my opinion is I think you can go, well, you can go probably some of all three. And I think, like, I don't even think, like, with in terms of management, it's in terms of like on-field management, I don't even think it's so much about finding the right guy for the right time, because there's a lot of guys who seem to not have any right times. I think it's more just like they're trying to balance, you know, their philosophies on handling the starting pitchers with their philosophies of using relievers, and it just kind of continues to merge into a ongoing train wreck. I think it's, you know, they are some guys out that I think would have been in the bullpen in at least prominent and or middling type roles. Like Alcala has been out most of the season, Stashek. And I've, you know, if you ask Nibish, I've complained about Cody Stashek plenty in the past also, but I kind of miss him. Right. I said, I kind of miss Cody Stashek right now. He's been out for the year and he won't be back. Danny Kulum has been out for a couple months and I don't know if he'll ever be back. So, yeah. So, like, I mean, especially if, like, they had Alcala, that would be one guy that I think they were pretty much counting on to be a top setup man. The Pagan trade obviously completely blew up in their faces, and that's a front office issue, I think.
I was gonna say, if we want to go from a general view to a specific view, Pagan is the one to target on, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, I know
some out there in the Twinsosphere are, you know, cautioning, like, no, come on, he's still good, I swear. And you know what? I gotta say, it's just I haven't seen it yet.
No, I mean, the problem with Pagan is, like, I mean, he's good in the sense that he still gets strikeouts, but he's bad in the sense that he's homer prone and he walks more people than he ever has before.
He's like historically bad, though.
Well, right. Like, the thing is, he's always been kind of homer prone. Mm. Like he's always kind of been a risk to give up homers. But this year, he doesn't have command of any of his pitches to a worse extent than he ever has had before. And so he's putting more guys on base before he gives up his homers than he probably ever has before. And yeah, no, it's like it's hard for me to say, oh, he's still good, because the only thing he does is he can strike guys out sometimes. Contrasts with Duffy, who can't strike anybody out ever anymore. and is also bad.
Yeah, that's another one to target with a stamped bad label.
But he hasn't given up as he has given up some homers, but probably not as many, I think, rate wise as Pagan has. I don't know the numbers on that for sure, but
they've both given up a lot of dramatic homers, unfortunately.
That's true. I mean, my contrast would be, I think a guy who looks bad but is better, is actually better than you would think he looks, is Caleb Thielbar. Like, I think his ERA still looks pretty bad because he got knocked around, I think, like two or three games in a row in April, and then he gave up a grand slam in Arizona when he was pitching the mop-up game. But when he's been used in crucial spots, I think more often than not, he's actually done pretty good. He had two games in a row. I mean, he didn't give up a run today against the White Sox, which not everybody in the bullpen can say. I think yesterday against the White Sox, he struck out three guys in a row. I think he's the one to me that is actually better than what his top line ERA looks like, compared to Pagan, who I think is probably just as bad as his ERA looks.
How about this? Let's not dwell on this too much, but one who's I think is kind of could go either way. What do you think about Jax, who I've just decided today I'm going to call Yax going forward? What do you think about Griffin Yax?
I like Griffin Jax in the bullpen. I think he's probably, I mean, unfortunately, he's probably the second most trusted one right now besides Duran.
Yeah, he had a rough day today, unfortunately.
Which is probably over his head. I mean,
right.
I like him, would like him a lot more if he was like the, you know, fourth-ish guy in the bullpen. But I think as a slider heavy guy with a little bit more velocity than he used to be able to throw with as a starter, I think he's got potential. It's just that, like I said, I think he's gotten thrown into a tougher role than he probably should have, or, you know, to be fair to him, ought to have been thrown into out of necessity because of guys like Pagan and Duffy, who were supposed to be in those roles. Have been so terrible. You know, in broad strokes, is they have to add guys to the bullpen. They have to make some trades.
I was going to say that next. What can be done for the rest of the season? Obviously, the trade market is going to be, you know, your best bet. But
they have to add probably at least two, possibly three relievers at the deadline, without a doubt. And then, you know, you do that and you hope Alcoa comes back, which is kind of a shaky hope because it's an elbow issue and he's been shut down. He's tried to rehab and been shut down from rehab, and I don't think he's back to rehabbing yet again. So I'm real shaky on whether Alco is ever going to be contributing this year, but you hope he can. And then maybe Kenta Maeda can pitch out of the bullpen in September.
I was going to bring him up as a dark horse. I'm glad that you mentioned him.
I don't know if he's going to be on a timeline where he can make it by then.
Right. But I mean, all early signs said that things were going well, but.
Right. It's undoubtedly a thought in their mind too, but they still have to add like at least two guys via trades. I don't think there's any other option. You can hope Kenta can contribute, but I think you still got to add at least two guys, maybe three guys in trades.
Based on our schedule, we'll do another podcast in like 3-4 months so we can say how it went at that point.
Because there's no Brusdar Gratterall in the minors right now. There's nobody weak. I mean, there's a couple guys like a Matt Cantorino, but he can't throw as hard as Brusdar Gratterall can. And so like they might call up one of their starters from the minors in September and say, just surround the bullpen and see what happens. But it's not a Brusdar level juice.
Impact relief type of player, yeah.
Right.
Well, let's move on to a somewhat more cheery and surprising subject, the not so bad starting rotation.
Yeah, I think compared to what people thought
going into the year, that seemed to be everybody's biggest gripe. But yeah, strangely, it's been, you know, going okay.
And especially considering now that they just put Archer on the injured list, every single one of them has been on the injured list, including some for multiple times.
That's just getting out of our systems or something.
I don't think they're saying this publicly, but I strongly feel that some of this is planned. Some of this is intentional downtime.
Okay.
I mean, they went into the season. They went into the season with seven or eight guys, right?
Right.
And that's not even counting Smeltzer, who came up and has established himself. But like but when they traded for Paddock, they had seven starters, and I'm pretty sure that it was their plan. And now Paddock obviously turned out to have a bum elbow, which is another part of that trade that got
blown up. That's another strike two.
Putting that aside, I think it was always part of their plan to have, because I don't think they wanted guys like Joe Ryan or Bailey Obert or Josh Winder to be throwing upwards of 150 innings this season.
I don't think
they wanted that for any one of them. So I think having some breaks for each of them was part of their, I bet they wouldn't say they, like, especially Obert, who's been out quite a while, and they probably didn't intend it to be this long, but I do think they wanted to space out some downtime for everyone.
They're in no rush to bring him back. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and you go down the list and they've all been pretty effective.
I was going to say that that's helped by the fact that, you know, especially the guys that they brought in have held their own pretty well. Even, you know, in the last few starts, Bundy has been decent even. So
Bundy has been, I mean, if you look at Dylan Bundy as a number four or a number five guy, right? I don't think, I mean, he's really only had one completely disastrous game, the one in Baltimore. I think even he's had some, you know, he's had some clunkers other than that one, but he's only had that one really, you know, complete disaster. And I think he went on the COVID list like the next day. So it's possible he was pitching with COVID that day.
Right.
But other than that, you know, I think he's done his job, which is to eat innings and mostly give you some kind of a chance.
He'll get you that five innings, and so far he's been leaving you on, you know, relatively solid ground. You can't really ask for too much more than that, especially for, you know, I don't think he was signed to the most egregious of contracts. So
I think it was like $5 million with some incentives.
I don't even see how you could ask for more than that. This has been great. And Sonny Gray has been holding it down as well.
Sonny Gray has been very, very good. I think that was, I mean, we liked that trade at the time it was made. And I think it's...
Oh, that was in that crazy... That was involved in the crazy weekend, right? Or am I misremembering that?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, Sonny Gray has been really good. Joe Ryan was really good before he had COVID. I think he's been... I think he maybe has been feeling the effects of that some as he's come back. So hopefully he's working that out of his system. But he's been probably a little bit down from where he was the first couple months of the season.
Well, and I think this is his first, like, real, you know, full season of use too.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, same with Josh Winder, who's come up and been very, very good when he's been starting, you know. And Devin Smeltzer, like I said, has came back out of nowhere and suddenly established himself as a rotation piece, at least for now. But I mean, again, Smeltzer, you can't ask for any more than what he's given. He's given them almost every game.
It's a pretty ragtag group, but like I said, yeah, they've been holding it together. So that's... That is definitely one surprise of the year for sure.
Yeah, you know, so going back to the bullpen discussion, I think the question on a lot of, I'm sure, I would imagine the question out there is, can we start having these pitchers go longer into games than they do?
Right. Well, and it's almost a question of like, do we have to because of the current situation?
Yeah. Exactly, right. Because my preference would be I think the way they handle the starters right now, just the starters, is really good. And I think that is borne out by how well they're doing. Like Chris Archer is another one. They never let Chris Archer face a team a third time.
He seems to get a quick hook, but those first two times through.
But he's been really good. Right. Yeah. And so I think for the effectiveness of the starters, it's been beneficial. But the problem is that they have no one they can count on in the bullpen.
No. Yes, that therein lies the issue for sure.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that'll keep being a question. And maybe if they can get like a Bailey Obert back and healthy, and then when Archer comes back also, like I said, I think they're just giving Archer a break. I'm not even sure he's that badly hurt. I think they're just more like, because Archer had made every start up to this point, but he was the only one who had, and he had made every single start up to this point. And now it's like, well, it's almost the All-Star break. It's time for Archer to get his turn off. When they get those guys back, assuming Ober's back and healthy, and assuming they get Archer back, you know, if they have like like seven of these guys again at once, then maybe you start seeing a little bit more of what Nibish and I were talking about
of the
piggybacks.
The piggyback.
I think we've only seen them do that so far about two or three times. I'm thinking of like the third game of the home series against Chicago in April. They had Archer pitch, I think, the first three innings, and they had Winder pitch the next four innings. I think that was a classic true piggyback, but I think they've only done something like that maybe one or two other times.
Actually, when Ober and Archer comes back, that might be not just a strategy, just a necessity.
Yeah.
That could work out well.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. I mean, we were advocating before, and again, with putting together this number of viable starters or bulk inning guys, and especially with the state of the bullpen, I think, you know, I would be 100% not shocked to see it utilized a little bit more in the second half of the season.
Well, that could be the way to go. And we will keep a tab on that. You know us. We are on top of this, the world's greatest online magazine.
Especially the piggybacks.
I mean, we trademarked it, so we better be keeping an eye on that, damn it.
It was ours first.
It's documented. It's out there on the internet. It lives forever. Except it doesn't. Anyway, why don't we flip the coin and look to what has been sunshine and rainbows most of the time, the Twins offense.
Except for occasions when it's complete
weird clouds and despair. Storms and squalls just kind of blow through every now and then. And it's been disconcerting to say the least. But yeah, so where should we start?
I mean, my thought coming into this was I was trying to think of, like, again, looking at the trade deadline, I think this was the way I was going to approach it, which is if you look up and down the roster of offensive players, which spot are we looking for more from individually than we're getting? And I actually was having a hard time thinking of who that is.
I am looking at this as you said it, and yeah, I wasn't maybe one or two names I could think of, but it wasn't like, oh, that one.
Right. I mean, like, we could probably stand to get more offense out of the catching position than we're getting, yeah. But
Kepler, wouldn't mind a little more out of Kepler.
Right. Yeah. Kepler's probably, I think Kepler's tough because he just is so neutered by the shift that, like, if this was next year, Kepler would be doing a lot better. But you could say that for a number of guys around baseball, but he would definitely be hitting a lot better if there wasn't a shift this year.
Anyway, yes, catcher would be one of the obvious places.
Yeah. But it's not like they're so bad that you're right. Like, well, right, we have to go trade for a catcher, right?
I mean, Sanchez isn't great, but at least you can say he's your backup catcher, so.
Right. I think maybe you're looking for somebody to play part-time at a corner spot, like, yeah, rotate in because with Arise and Kirilov and Kepler all being left-handed, maybe you want one more guy who's right-handed. I mean, we got Garlick, you know, who is our favorite lefty masher, but maybe if you want one more guy who is a right-handed corner type guy, I mean, it wouldn't be a full-time guy. I don't think there's anybody, you know, and maybe that right-handed guy is Miguel Sano. You never know.
Actually, I haven't heard an update on him. How close was he to coming back?
He just started playing in the Florida Complex League, lowest league, a couple days ago. I think he played on the 4th, actually. I think that was his first game. And they said they're going to give him undoubtedly the full, I think you're allowed 20 days of a rehab assignment before you have to conclude your rehab assignment.
I didn't realize there was a limit on that. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's like sometimes people will have a quote unquote setback if they're not really ready to come back. So they'll like take them off the rehab assignment and then start a new one. But otherwise you have to do something with them roster wise after the 20 day rehab assignment is over. So, and it seems I can't imagine they don't give him the entire 20 days.
Right.
He'll play in Florida and then for a while. And then they said they'll bring him to St. Paul when they feel like he's, you know, ready to play at that level. But, you know, it being Sano always takes a while to get going, even when he does get going. So
he's a big guy. He's a big guy. He needs momentum.
Yeah. But otherwise, yeah, like second base is good. Shortstop is good. Center field is good.
Yep.
Third base is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that Urshela has played pretty well on the team.
Yeah.
He's what you expect it to be, which is
right
about as much as you can ask.
Right. You know, Kirilov looks like he's put his wrist issues somewhat behind him.
Picking it up together. Actually, I was going to ask you what you thought about Nick Gordon.
Oh, no. Nimish and I were having a talk about, I don't know. He had a really, really great day today. So he kind of, and by great, I mean, he was like over five, I think. I teased Nimish he actually had coming into the day, and I'm sure it's not the case now because he was 0 for 5 today, but coming into the day, he had the highest expected weighted on base average of the team, except for Kyle Garlick, who, you know, as we only have bat against left-handed pitchers, so he was actually a point higher in expected weighted on base average than, you know, your Arraez and your Correa and your Polanco and your Kepler and your Buxtons. Right. So, like, I mean, again, it's, what that says to me is that he actually is making pretty good contact with the ball when he is making contact with the ball, which is better than he used to.
He's not the greatest, obviously, but he's taken good steps as a role player.
With this level of performance, I'm 100% fine with him being around as a utility guy. Except I get a little bit worried about him playing shortstop specifically, but once in a while, it's probably fine. And
so got Polanco to, you know, take some of that too.
Yeah, for sure. And otherwise, he's fine in left field. He's fine at second base. He can hang in center field. I'd rather have Celestino in center field, but he can. Right. But Gordon can hang in center field also. And, you know, again, like I said, like an Ejidre Adrianza type of role is perfectly fine for Nick Gordon. Right. I think that's great. You know, I think, no problem with that. Yeah.
Actually, you brought up a point. I was going to ask specifically about Celestino and Miranda.
Yeah.
You know, there was questions about them, but they've looked like they've deserved to hang up and, you know, on the 25.
Celestino is actually such an interesting hitter to watch because he's the only guy on the team who tries to hit everything to the opposite field. And it has started to demonstrate that he's probably going to have to try to start pulling things more because his numbers have actually declined quite a bit from the first few weeks he was up. He was filling in a lot.
Starting to figure him out. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not surprising because the quality of his contact is not, I mean, it's not, he doesn't hit the ball hard. He doesn't hit the ball with really great distance or launch angles. He just tries to bloop everything to right field. And so, like, for a while it was working and nobody realized he was going to do that every time. And a lot of times they were shifting him, so there was nobody over there. Now they're not playing him shifted, they're playing him straight up, and there's a lot less space for him to do that with. But that, putting that aside, he's at least holding his own at the plate to a point where you can have him in there in the nine hole and filling in. And he's been, I think, pretty good in center field also as the backup center fielder. And I think he's covered, you know, an issue that this roster had and especially has had because Buxton needs days off and days off of the field. He's covered an issue that this roster really needed a lot to have covered, and he's done probably better than anybody.
That's only because Nick Cave's not on the team.
Nick Cave.
I did it again.
I heard them say on the radio yesterday. Apparently, Jake Cave had reached base in like 30 straight games or something like that.
I read on Jeff A's post, he hit like 3 home runs in the last week or something like that.
Yeah, Jake Cave when healthy is better than a AAA player. I'm perfectly honest with you.
Right.
I understand we as Minnesota fans have, you know, it's a painful subject to talk about Jake Cave, but he is a better player than a AAA player.
right. But yeah, I mean, how about some of the brightest spots on the roster? Arias's year has been just spectacular.
Yeah, like he's better than he ever was before. I mean, it's just amazing.
It's what everyone was saying was coming. And it's so nice to see it. I mean, so great for him. It's so great for us, obviously. It's probably my, you know, biggest feel-good story of the year for the Twins.
I don't know what the procedures are anymore for how they pick the reserves, but I do hope he gets picked because he deserves it.
Yeah, that's right. Do the managers get any picks anymore? I don't know.
I have no idea. One of you guys look this up for us because we have no idea.
Post it in the comments. You can't see it, but I'm pointing down. So yeah, that's been wonderful to see.
I like Miranda too. I think I worry about his point of discipline long term too. And I also don't know about his long term position. I'm not sure he can play third base at this level.
Doing good at first base at least.
Yeah, he's been okay at first base, but obviously if you're gonna be a first baseman, you gotta hit. You know, you hit a lot.
Right.
You know, to his credit, after the first like 3 or 4 weeks, he has hit a lot.
It was a rough start, I remember, but yeah, he started picking it up.
Yeah, he's picked it up a lot, so that's been good to see. And you know, he does provide a bit of a right-handed corner type presence, which helps balances out a lot, which we need. So again, you know, with Miranda, and if they get Sano back, I don't know. I have no idea if Sano can play this year at all at an effective level,
right?
But with Miranda at least, and then maybe you keep and having Garlic around, maybe you don't even need to add any bats at the trade deadline, right?
That's a possibility, yeah.
So you throw everything you got into bullpen upgrades, you know, or you hang on to your biggest trade pieces, like, because you're not going to be giving up your best minor league players for bullpen guys.
No, I would hope not.
You hang on to those guys and make some moves in the offseason.
Thankfully, we don't have any star catchers to trade.
Yeah, right. I mean, exactly, right. I was trying to think of what the equivalent to a real Wilson Ramos would be right now. But honestly, it's mostly like...
Yeah, I can't think of a particular one either.
Like trading Royce, even though he won't play again for a year. Trading Royce for a relief pitcher would be worse than trading Wilson Ramos for a relief pitcher.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I don't think that's quite on the same level. Yeah.
I think despite the ups and downs of the bullpen and the ins and outs of the season, I think this has been a better than expected season so far. I think my overall feeling is pretty positive, and I'm looking forward to the next couple of months because it should be a fun ride to the stretch. I don't know. I mean, there's always negativity out there about every loss, but I think they're better than they were expected to be.
Yeah, honestly, I think that's undoubtedly true. And bless the Central's hearts, they've completely allowed us to do this and go forward with it. And I hope for more of the same.
Absolutely.
So yes, the skies are at least partly sunny, or is it partly, which one's the brighter one? Partly sunny or partly cloudy? I always get that confused.
I think it's partly cloudy. Cloudy is actually brighter, yeah.
Right. Okay, so we have a partly cloudy outlook on the Twins, despite how that sounds. It's a good thing. And yes, hopefully bright skies ahead. We have a few minutes here, so why don't we go over some recent music picks? DK, do you got something first, or I got it?
You go first, because I have a pick that I will... I mean, I have two picks depending on what you pick.
Okay, so how about I will start off first, and I'm actually going to pick one of yours, DK. I'm hoping you have this in mind so I can steal it from you. I love him. I'm so happy to see him come back. It is such a banger. Gosh darn Orville Peck with Come On Baby Cry. Yep.
That is the one. I knew you would pick that, but I was ready to pick that if you didn't. But yeah, that is the one I was going to pick, yeah.
It's a great song. He's got those sweet, dulcet tones. I love a good driving beat. It's got everything. It's a great song. I haven't seen the list of nominations yet. It should be coming soon. But I have a feeling this is going to end up on the summer mix. Orville Peck, Come On Baby Cry.
My pick, since you did successfully execute a steal, couldn't throw you out there. My pick is actually going to go back to before, I think, the last pick that I did on the last podcast, but I have been listening to this band called Nation of Language. I've been listening to them all year, pretty much. It's the song I played, I think, back in January. It's called Across That Fine Line. And they're a synth poppy type of 80s throwback that with this dude's voice that's really, really unique and interesting the more I listen to it. And I think I nominated a different song for this remix, so no spoilers, but I think another one will get on there, but so I won't pick that one when we do some remix picks, but I love the bass playing style. I love the synth tones. I love this guy's voice. and they're just, it's a bop. They have a number of bops with the kind of, you know, that kind of melancholy undertone that gives you that nice contrast between the synth poppiness and the dark underneath. So my pick is Nation of Language across that fine line. And I'm watching you all.
Say, I don't know who designed the set at KEXP, but I love those lights they have in the background. It always sets the perfect mood.
It's brilliant.
Yes, it's beautiful. And actually, that is a good reminder. Coming up, please keep your eyes out for Summer Mix 2022. The nominations are in, the selections will begin, and we will have it out to you soon on this very here channel, where you find it, where we always ask that you mash that subscribe button and the like button too, I suppose.
Both of them, yeah.
Push it hard. Don't do them at the same time because it might get confused and only do one or the other. So alternatively, mash those buttons. Give us 5 stars, give us your love, and give your love to the twins.
They're not awful.
They're not awful. I mean,
but overall, they're not awful.
Compared to the last time. When was the last time we did this podcast? It was a while ago.
It was before the season, I think.
Was it? Oh, yeah, I think it was. I think you're right. Yeah, we were tentative. But, you know, I am happy to ride this wave. We're always ride or die. We will ride this wave to the end.
Definitely.
And I'm sure we will have lots to talk to you about next time, whenever that could be. Maybe close to the trade deadline. Who knows?
Trade Deadline Podcast.
All right. It's been great talking to you guys. We will see you again soon. Stay safe out there. Don't you know it.
Much love.
God, terrible at this. I'm going to cut that off way earlier.
Yeah! Cha-ching!